To see and learn more about the people and places we talk about in this show, visit our website, downthehillpodcast.com.
Give me just a second here. Seldom do I have prepared remarks, but today is different because I do not want there to be any confusion or ambiguity with what I will say. Today is not a day to celebrate, but the arrest of Richard M. Allen of Delphi on two counts of murder is sure a major step in leading to the conclusion of this long-term and complex investigation.
We've always said that if there is a significant update, that you would hear from us again. There has been an arrest in the murders of Abigail Williams and Liberty German. For 2,086 days, Becky Patty has woken up every day and posted on social media that today is the day. A relentless belief that there would be an arrest. It appears that on October 31st, 2022, it just may be that day.
The sheriff's office and community members continue to look for two missing girls.
Two bodies were found along the edge of Deer Creek, about a mile east of Delphi, not far from Monon High Bridge, where the girls were last seen.
We are investigating this as a crime scene. We suspect foul play.
It's amazing that we have a video, we have a still photograph, we have sound, and we don't know who this person is.
Was there a signature in this crime?
I'd say at least three.
To the killer, who may be in this room, we believe you are hiding in plain sight. We likely have interviewed you. We know that this is about power to you, and you want to know what we know. And one day, you will.
I feel very confident that they know exactly what they're doing.
I agree.
This is Down the Hill, the Delphi Murders.
I'm Dan Simatovich, along with Andrew Iden and Barbara McDonald, and we're here in Delphi, Indiana, where we just left the press conference where it was announced that Richard M. Allen, 50 years old, has been arrested and charged with two counts of murder in the killings of Abigail Williams and Liberty German. And I think just right off the bat, let's listen to some highlights of what happened. We're not going to take you through the entire thing, but here are some of the key points. Let's start with Superintendent Doug Carter and what he had to say.
While I know you are all expecting final details today concerning this arrest, today is not that day. Today is not that day. This investigation is far from complete, and we will not jeopardize its integrity by releasing or discussing documents or information before the appropriate time.
Next, let's hear from Sheriff Tobe Lesenby. If you're a regular listener to this podcast, you know him, you know his voice, Sheriff of Carroll County. And he came out swinging.
I believe in a God of justice and righteousness. Today, I believe that same God has provided us with justice for Abby and Libby. We now move forward through the Indiana criminal justice system, allowing the system to provide its due diligence and process in providing that justice which is owed Abby and Libby, their families, in this community.
And the last speaker at this press conference was Carroll County Prosecutor Nick McClelland. He's the one who's going to be in charge of prosecuting this case. And he had a little more to say about the charges that were filed and what happens next.
There are many dates in a lifetime that you're going to remember. The date your children are born, the date you're married, the date you buy a first house, the date Abby and Libby went missing. One of those dates was last Friday, October 28, 2022. At that time, we had gathered evidence to formulate a PC that we submitted to the court, and the judge did find probable cause for an arrest of Richard Allen. He's been charged with two counts of murder. This investigation is still very ongoing. We're keeping the tip line open, the tip email open. We encourage everybody to continue to call in tips, not only about Richard Allen, but about any other person that you may have. For that reason and for the nature of this case, the probable cause and the charging information has been sealed by the court. I've been very clear to everybody that per the court order, we cannot talk about the evidence that's in the probable cause or the evidence that's in the charging information. That will become evident to you at some point, and it'll be released, but right now is not that day. Mr. Allen has had his initial hearing. He's entered a preliminary plea of not guilty. The matter's been set for a pretrial on January 13th at 9 a.m., 2023, and a trial date of March 20th, 2023 at 9 a.m. We will have an opportunity and day in court when we can present the evidence that we have against him. But until that day, he is presumed innocent.
Okay, that was a lot. That was a heck of an experience. We were all in the room. How did that feel to you guys?
You know, I think one of the things that was really interesting is that for this community and for these families, what today represented in a lot of ways was relief because of all the waiting that they've been doing. And I think that the community as well finally had a chance to exhale a little bit mm-hmm. because everybody's been so on edge for 6 years. I felt that way in that room. And I felt that way with law enforcement, seemed to have some relief in the sound of what they were saying as well.
Yeah. And I was kind of struck by how it was a very different tone than April of 2019 when they really were very dramatic and passionate. This was a little bit more toned down even by Superintendent Doug Carter standards, I think. And I think it's important to note one of the things he said right off the bat was this is not a day to celebrate. This is a major development, but there is still a long road ahead.
I was really concerned going into this because I think we all were because we didn't know what was going to be said. And prior to this press conference, we'd spent a good amount of time in the town of Delphi and the area around, and people think that this was over, that today was the day, this is the guy. And we'll get into this a little bit. There's questions about that, but I think what today at least offered was a beginning of an end, a new phase, hope. And you could feel that in the room, I think. You could feel, an exhale behind us. We were sort of in the media section, and a lot of the people who live in the area were filling out the room, and you could just feel that all right energy, right? It was a pretty powerful experience.
Yeah, we in the news media oftentimes with stories that take a long time, we talk about when is the story going to be over, right? This story, I think it for a lot of people, I think they feel like the story is now over. But it's not at all over, obviously, and that was reflected in what everybody in law enforcement said today. Mm-hmm. In fact, you mentioned the phrase, you said new phase, right? This is a left turn on a road that has got a lot more, turns to go. And so it was also interesting that Superintendent Carter underscored it actually in a lot of ways heightens their investigation. They're adding resources. He said they're expanding their investigative team. So it is not at all over. This is a left turn, one of many that is still to come.
The tip lines remain open. They're still asking for tips. They're asking for tips on anything anybody wants to call about. Unlike previous announcements where they have asked for specific information about an individual or about a sketch, about a piece of information, now they're just saying, call us with whatever you want to tell us. And that's interesting. It from a show perspective, it's almost like season one ended and now we're beginning season two and it's a whole new ballgame.
One thing is very different. There is someone behind bars for this right now, or a suspect behind bars who has been charged with murder. Let's take a couple steps back and sort of look at the bigger picture. There's been a lot of celebration about this person being arrested, Richard Allen. But what does it mean? What does it mean to the big picture? Where are we in the story? And I think let's start with looking at some of those charges, right? All they would say is that he was charged with two counts of murder, one for Abby, one for Libby. And we spoke with a couple of law enforcement officers afterwards to get a better idea of what a murder charge in Indiana means. And you're probably used to hearing first degree, second degree, third degree murder. That doesn't exist in Indiana. Murder is murder. Murder charge is a murder charge. Also, interestingly, if you are an accessory to a murder, that is also just murder. And one thing that they would not say, and we asked them several times as well, we asked, is Richard Allen the killer? Is he the person who killed Abby and Libby, or is he someone who participated in the crime?
In some way.
In some way. They wouldn't answer that.
One of the things that surprised me was how quickly they have already announced his pretrial court date and his trial date.
Yeah.
How often do you hear that on the day you hear about the arrest?
It actually struck me a bit odd that it was, here's the name, here's two charges, here's the date of his pretrial, and here's the first day of his trial.
Yeah, because his initial hearing, his arraignment was Friday, Friday, October 28th.
Right. And they're planning a trial in March, which is, what, 5 months from now. And for two murder charges, that seems like an awfully short time to prepare both for the prosecution and the defense.
Yeah. And again, we don't, you know, everything is sealed. The probable cause affidavit, the arrest warrant, the charging document, it's all sealed. And so
it's coming out at some point.
It's coming out at some point.
He did say, Nicholas McClelland did say it's going to come out at some point.
So let's zoom out again and take a look at Richard M. Allen, the person behind bars. What do we know about him at this point?
So we're still kind of putting that picture together. I think, you know, obviously over time we're going to get a real deep understanding of some of these details about this guy. But what we know at this point is that he lives in Delphi. It appears that he is married. From what we can gather, he's lived all over Indiana his entire life. We also know that he worked at the CVS in Delphi and in some capacity worked in the pharmacy as well. And so this is a guy that in a town this size, you know, everybody kind of probably has some interaction with him. And we've had multiple conversations with people who are like, I went to CVS three times a week. People are obviously very familiar with CVS. They go there and get medications.
It's right next to the McDonald's. So it's probably a very popular.
So whether the people knew him or not, they all assumed that at some point they've had some interaction with him. So I went in when we got into town on Friday, I went into the CVS just to get some gear, but also knowing where we were in the story that this was kind of part of the picture. I went in and it was striking to me because the front door of the store, as many of the places in this town do, has a wanted poster with the sketches and the picture of the man on the bridge. And presumably Richard Allen walked into that door every single day to go to work. And in the back of the store at the pharmacy on the counter next to the credit card swipe machine is a flyer with the wanted poster and a sketch and a picture of the guy on the bridge. And presumably Richard Allen would stand behind the counter at the pharmacy, refill prescriptions, and see that thing every single day.
There's also a picture floating around out there of him at a local bar with the sketch behind him also. In Delphi, the sketch is everywhere.
Right.
It is, yeah. And you can't escape it living here. I mean, it is posted pretty much in every store that we've been to.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, we talked before about seeing that poster everywhere and being and thinking, oh man, can you imagine if the killer sees this every single day? But it's even more chilling to think about it on the other side of where we are right now, right? Like now we know that that guy not only saw it, he walked past it every single day and it's sitting there at his job. It's even more like it's still chilling to think about it that way.
But the flip side of that that is interesting as well is, you know, people have been asking, people who follow this case have been asking, why doesn't anybody recognize him? Why doesn't anybody in a town of 3,000 recognize him? And this is a man who was working regularly for years in a place that's very public here in Delphi with these flyers posted right near where he's working. And I have talked to multiple people, including members of Libby's family, who were regulars in that store and didn't make the connection. They didn't think he looked like the sketches necessarily. They didn't think he sounded like it. There was nothing about him that raised their suspicions. So he truly is hiding in plain sight right in the middle of town.
Well, let's pause on that note too, because we still don't know if he is the person in those sketches. We don't know what he is being accused of. As we know he's been charged with murder, but what does that mean in this case? Right. And like, I think that's really worth underlining, and just until we have more information, keeping that question in mind.
Right.
Are authorities saying he's an accessory? Are they saying he's the killer? We just don't know right now. We don't know how long he's been on the radar of police. We hear that it's been somewhat relatively recent, but there was a search. Not too long ago of his property.
There was a search on October 13th. It was a Thursday that started just before noon. And I spoke with several of Richard Allen's neighbors who say that they watched it. It's a very quiet neighborhood. They've never had anything happen in their neighborhood. So when they saw all these, what appeared to them to be unmarked police cars arriving and all of these men getting out of the car and going up to Richard's front door, they became suspicious. What's going on over there? What do we need to know? And they watched for the next 12 hours as police approached the door and asked him and his wife to exit their home. They kept them out of the home the entire day. They said that Richard stood outside his home for several hours. He sat in a vehicle with his wife for several hours. At some point, she left. They said there wasn't a lot going on. It was more people standing around for the first part of the day. And then as it was starting to get dark, they saw Chief Deputy Tony Liggett of the Carroll County Sheriff's Department arrive. And he's somebody that they know, so they recognized him immediately. They said he had a piece of paper in his hand, and he went up to Richard and showed him the piece of paper. And it was right after that, they said a tow truck arrived immediately, started loading up his car. The officers who had been there accumulating all day entered the house. Some went into the backyard. They started searching around a shed, taking pictures, doing some digging. They used some sort of a device around the shed and in a flower bed that they thought was perhaps a metal detector, could be some sort of a sonar device or whatever to get a sense of what might be buried there. They did not dig up the flower bed, but they did dig up two spots near the shed. They also watched as police brought items out of the house, and the husband was watching with binoculars. He said that he saw one officer come out with what appeared to be two large bundles of dark colored cloth. He said, I couldn't tell you that it's clothing, but it definitely appeared to be cloth. There was a Macy's shopping bag, a shoebox, and a stack of books that he said, you know, just looked like a reasonable stack of thin books, not like a huge stack of large encyclopedias or anything like that. They said that the two areas in the backyard that were dug up were rather small. One was incredibly small. They said that perhaps all that could have come out of that spot was perhaps a bottle cap or something of that size. And they were curious, of course, wondering what is happening with our neighbor's house, our quiet neighbor. They said that he was somebody that they had lived next to for several years, that there was nothing special about him, was the way they phrased it to me, that he didn't have loud parties, he didn't have people over. They would see him going and coming from work, sitting out in his driveway, having a couple of beers after work, and maybe smoking some cigarettes. They had a little more interaction with his wife, but they said they were just very quiet neighbors. And after watching that for 12 hours, this is a family that has children, and they called Tony Liggett and said, hey, you know, we're a little concerned here about what happened, what this is all about. And all that Deputy Liggett would tell them at the time was to stay vigilant, especially with your wife and daughters, which unsettled them. And it wasn't until this past Friday, October 28th, when they saw a news report that there had been a development. They know some members of Abby and Libby's families. They called them and were able to, through conversation, make the connection that the family had been alerted to some information that sounded like it matched what they had seen with their neighbor, and put two and two together. And they said starting with Wednesday, October 26th, they didn't see anybody in the house. That's apparently the day that he was first detained. And they're not sure where his wife is, but they haven't seen her at the property. But they said this was just a very normal, quiet family.
So one of the things I wanted to point out about what you're reporting is that I think throughout the entire work on this case that we've done, we've all envisioned when an arrest is made, kind of a full force, long arm of the law, U.S. Marshals, Sheriff's Office, ISP, choppers, you know, kind of the just the full force, right? This doesn't sound like it was that.
No, and they said nothing was marked. None of the officers were wearing uniforms.
For the arrest.
Marked. Well, for what they saw at the search warrant.
Okay, right.
Nobody had any symbolism on their jackets or shirts identifying them. They did, because they have lived in the area a long time, they know many of the officers that are routinely working in the area. So there were some faces that they recognized as being law enforcement. The vehicles matched. There was a vehicle parked out front that appeared to them to be a crime scene truck of some sort. And they watched this activity all day. And they said, you know, in our entire lives, we've never seen this kind of activity at a neighbor's house. So it definitely alarmed them.
So just to kind of get the timeline here, when was the search of the property?
The search was Thursday, October 13th. So about 2 weeks prior to this announcement.
Two weeks prior to the arrest. Yes. So for 2 weeks, he was still there.
Yeah, they said they watched as he continued to live his life as normal. They know that the day after the search, he went to work. They saw him in the store, and they felt like he was continuing to just live his life as normal.
And so he was arrested on Wednesday, the 26th.
Correct.
And he was arraigned on Friday, the 28th, which is what Doug Carter is calling the day.
Today is the day, yeah.
Now, Drew, you got here on Friday.
I did. I got here Friday, and I made two stops immediately. The first thing I did, though, was I pointed my GPS to the house of Richard Allen. And so when I went past there on Friday, it was as the neighborhood was absolutely, it was crickets. There was not a soul to be found. And the house kind of sits, it's the kind of the second house when you make the turn onto the streets, the second house as you go down the street on the left-hand side. And it's kind of hidden by a line of pine trees. But as you come around those trees, I mean, this house, there's nobody there. The doors are shut. The garage is shut. The curtains are drawn. The lights are turned off. There's not a single sign of anyone inside that house. And that was Friday. I went back yesterday just to be sure.
Yesterday being Sunday.
Yesterday being Sunday, correct. And it was the same. There was not a soul to be found. So whoever in his family is also calling that home is not calling it home now, it appears. They've gone somewhere else.
And do we know where Richard Allen is now as of this recording?
We do, because we confirmed last night with the White County Sheriff that's where he is being held.
So he initially was taken into custody, from what I understand, in Carroll County, and then he was transferred for safekeeping to White County, which is a county over.
We don't know a lot about him. We don't know a lot about how, I think everything that we know, we just told you.
We've talked to a lot of people who are regular shoppers in the CVS who've interacted with him over the years, and nobody has reported anything unusual. People say he was very friendly. He was very helpful in the store. He was a regular face in the store. The other interesting thing is where his house is located. He's very close to the high school and middle school. He's not far from where Abby was living with her family, less than 2 miles, and less than about 2 miles from the south end of that bridge. There were, you know, having lived here, and my understanding is he was a hunter. He had a hunting license issued in his name. And he probably was very familiar with that area. He had lived there from what I understand 2006 or 2007 in that house.
Yeah, the Monon High Bridge spans Deer Creek. And interestingly, there is an offshoot creek that feeds Deer Creek called Bridge Creek. It runs right by his house. So that kind of gives you an idea of the proximity of him to this crime scene.
And the multiple ways that if he is in fact the person who was out on the bridge that day, if he is the person who took the lives of Abby and Libby,
which we still don't know,
he had multiple ways that he could have gotten back home, whether in a vehicle that he could have parked any number of places, or whether walking that creek or walking another path through woods.
So we got some answers today. But I think for us, a whole bunch of new questions came up. And there are some of them are big questions, I think, that we all have. We mentioned them a little earlier. First, let's just revisit what you just said. Is this man the man who killed Abby and Libby? If he is, why not come out and say it? If he's not, what is his involvement?
Another question is, the last request we had from law enforcement was to provide information on a fake social media profile named Anthony Schatz and anybody who might have been using it and communicating with girls. So is there some connection between this man and that profile?
The last part of the press conference was a Q&A session, a short Q&A session with the press, and the person connected to that profile was brought up and that was asked about, and the law enforcement immediately ended the press conference. That is not to say that there is anything to that. They just do not want to get into anything involving the active investigation.
Right. Which, and they say this investigation is active and ongoing, and they still have a lot to learn.
Yeah.
And so do we.
So it's all, all three of us have seen plenty of arrests, plenty of charges, plenty of announcements of murder charges. This seems like, just through our experience, an unusual unfolding of what is often a pretty defined ceremony, if you will, right?
But it's also thematic of a lot of the checkpoints along the way in this story.
True.
That have been done a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Whether that's frustrating or not, it is what it is, right? Like, they have a way that they do things that sometimes is a little bit different than what we're all used to. And this was another kind of example of that.
Sure. It's just very notable to me that they did not come out and say, we got him, case closed.
Exactly. And if you remember, that is something that Sheriff Lesenby told us in the podcast, is that when that day came, he would stand up there and say, we got him. And that was not said by anyone at the press conference today.
This case specifically has a lot of extra speculation and conversation. And I think it's really, especially as it gets to now into a phase where an arrest has been made and there's going to be some more information that comes out, I think that it behooves all of us, when it comes to this story, to be as clear and concise and as adherent to the facts as possible, based on what we know.
Yeah, and what we do know is that an arrest has been made, charges have been filed, there's a trial upcoming.
And he is presumed innocent until he is proven guilty in a court of law.
And as always, it's all very complicated. Down the Hill, The Delphi Murders is written and produced by Barbara McDonald, Andrew Iden, and me, Dan Sematovich. Editorial oversight is from Brian Bell, and original scoring is from Shu Vo Sir. To learn more about the people and places we talk about in this show, visit our website, downthehillpodcast.com. Thank you for listening.